Whip of the committee. My name is Enoch Mthethwa. I'm a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Good afternoon. My name is Phindile Mola, a member of this committee. I thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Sheda Sheikh, a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Sam Zandamela. I'm a member of this committee.
Thanks, Chairperson. Even though you have already introduced me, I'm Kenny Muzamai, member of the Council of Provinces in Gauti.
It's Michael Ngwali from the Office of the Chairperson, NSOP.
Okay. Are there any other officials from our side?
Good afternoon. My name is Advocate Tafneem Sidis Jaffa. I'm the researcher to this committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and honorable members and guests. I'm Felicia Lombard. I'm the Principal Communications Officer for this committee.
Baum Chiza, can you introduce yourself whilst you are there?
Oh, afternoon, everyone. My name is Intention Chiza, Committee Secretary.
Okay. Thank you. At least we know each other. We'll do the same with the Department of Social Development when we are dealing with them. Over to you, teacher.
Thank you, Chair. Our intention, my name is Mbulelo Changana. I'm the DG of Human Settlements, also acting in water and sanitation. We don't intend to bore you with a long presentation. I guess the intention is to make this as interactive as possible without leaving out any item that was pronounced by the minister. The areas that we are going to cover, Chair, are not too many. We will cover the land issue. Recall that we did touch on the land issue. How are we administering the assembled, the land assembly? This is one area that Minister highlighted in the debate. We will cover the area of the new generation of mega projects, what we call catalytic projects. We will touch on it. We will also take care of the material supply in the business of human settlements. For every house we build, we spend almost 70% on material supply. Minister did touch on the business of material supply and the transformation of the sector and the 30% set aside. We will also look at the area of innovative or alternative building technology. It's conventional technology in other countries. It is innovative building technology in our country because we're still using brick and mortar. We're still using our own conventional way of building. We will make sure that we look at the block projects. We still have a significant number of block projects, especially in provinces like Northwest. We've already started in unblocking some of those projects in the Northwest. And we will also cover the area of communications. How do we deal with communications? It's not so much about how hard we work. Is who knows the hard work that we're doing. Do we communicate with the communities? We will also make sure that we look at the two grants that we're administering. For informal settlements upgrading. We look at the Urban Settlements Development Grant and the Human Settlements Development Grant. We will end our session with two areas, and that will be the title deeds, the area of title deeds. We've been struggling to get this particular program going. It's a very complicated and very time-consuming exercise to retrofit some of the townships that have not been opened, because the reason why we are experiencing a massive backlog of title deeds is because we didn't open the townships when we're supposed to open them. And these are old projects, and some of them, they do go back to as early as 1997. We will then cover the metropolitan areas and also look at the employee housing scheme, which is the scheme that was introduced by government using government pension fund. I think government is a pioneer in the area of using pension fund to build houses or to subsidize housing for its workers. I'm going to ask my colleague, the acting DDG, William Gian, to take us through each and every one of those items, and I'll come back right at the end. William, over to you.
Taking note that the document was with us, no? Over to you.
Thank you, Chair, for making me aware of it was with you. It makes me run through it much quicker, but may I greet you, Chairperson, and the members of the committee and colleagues present. With that in mind, Chair, in terms of the land, we're working very closely with five other departments on this. We've got a JCC, but what we did not include in the submission is that we've got our housing development agency as part of the team. The 11,743 pieces of land that we're referring to here is what the housing development agency has got in its books and working with the other departments or provinces on it. If we come to the N2 gateway, the notion of making our cities and our townships modern started with the N2 gateway. And we are proud now that we've got the Cosmos City as one of those emerging new developments. We've got Lufereng, we've got now in Devon as well, Konobia. So we're starting to realize the change of the space. In essence, these are new cities. The size and scale of what you see is huge, and they're still growing. Konobia is still growing with another 20,000. By the time it's finished, it will be adjacent to the Kinshasa Airport. That's how people are. And that program is now taking shape. If you read the 58 catalytic project, or what we have in our NTSF, is the addition to those particular growth of our cities. DG has mentioned the issue of material suppliers. It's not an easy one. The big manufacturers tend to supply the big merchants, your cash bills, your builder's warehouse, and so on. And therefore, they have the advantage of having a better pricing structure than our smaller builders. But the new directive that has come through is forcing our provinces to also look at the smaller builder or the smaller hardware to be a supplier. Because if they have a massive order, they can also match the prices. We're still monitoring how that is going. We started with some projects with Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. It started to working through with our entity, the NHFC. We'll monitor how this goes. It's not as simple as we thought it is. The monopoly around these issues are huge. D is also linked to F. If you take the fact that they are both in, they are all dealing with alternative technology processes. Underpinning it is that we have a bilateral agreement with the Department of Science and Technology, which also houses the CSIR and the other entities there. CORE is the CSIR, which is leading in the development of alternative technology. All of us are meeting at CSIR or through DST with the Department of Energy, the Department of Environment, with the same intention of how can we bring environmentally friendly units or houses in our communities. looking into the fact that the climate is changing and therefore it requires us to have better resourced houses that are not going to be affected by the changes that we're experiencing. But taking into account as well the technologies that are coming in, we now have modern houses that require you as a household to manage your house through your handheld phone. Can that be applied in our own houses? So the scope there is huge, and we are in this next, maybe MTSF, going to look into how we streamline this even before we start the process. NHBRC is working on the panels that sits on the roof for lighting systems so that they are adequate and right for the structure that we're building, as opposed to the one that we used before for the geysers, which we're not sure whether the weight was correct for the structure that we're building. We are looking at the block projects. I think DG will come back to this one later. We even had a meeting where we're thinking of roping other role players to assist in the repackaging of what was block projects, and therefore approaching the MECs of the various provinces where these projects are lying and entering into a revised agreement for them to be taken as priority projects to be completed. So there's a lot of work that is happening behind the scenes on that one, but hopefully there's a timeline that is given for coming back to this committee with a firm answer in 2021. So we're committing ourselves to this one strongly. F, I have linked it to D, because that's all the alternative technology approach that you are taking. Communication is an ongoing process. We have reinstated our PNG series on TV to try and keep the communities informed of what is happening. We are also rolling out a few number of programs that are going to be taking into the communities. One of them will be informing the communities about the changes that are going to happen in the Housing Consumer Bill. That requires us to go through all provinces with that work, and therefore it's a consumer education process for us as a department before it comes back to Parliament for consultation with the communities. So we will be rolling out this program for the next 2 months together with the guidelines that we have developed for planning of urban spaces. The thorny issue of title deeds, I think DG has raised. Maybe let me leave it to him to explain better,
yeah,
because he's already undertaken to come back to you on this one.
All right.
We have set ourselves in this coming MTSF an ambitious project or program of taking some of our grants and streamlining them into specific grants. One is for informal settlements upgrading, one is for title deeds, one is for, one is for what we call FLISP. These grants are meant to target specific spaces or programs that should be in specific spaces so that we see and we make impact. This will force provinces, our developers, to follow through what is expected of them, and we can monitor and measure whether they're doing what is asked of them, because when we give them a grant as it is, they tend to spend not in the areas that we're looking for. So these new grants are meant to redirect the way they do business and therefore force them to do exactly what needs to be implemented. This will express itself largely in metros, because that's where major problems are lying. I think Gauteng on its own is almost a metro now. It's where you have your largest chunk of your budget going to, and therefore you want to see major impacts happening in the space. But equally with the other metros like Buffalo City, where we are embarking strongly on the renovation or the remaking of Duncan Village. Lastly, Chair, if we look at the the issue of employee housing scheme. It's a major area of concern. If you look at the numbers of how many people that are employed in the public sector which still do not have houses. We do acknowledge as well that part of some of them have opted to rent as opposed to own a house. The reason is that we are in an environment where moving around is much easier than before. I can be working in Pretoria, but I can also find an employment here at Parliament and move from Pretoria to here. If I own a house, it makes it difficult for me to have a house there and rent here. And so people tend to take rental as an option. It's largely the younger generation that's doing that. The older generation wants to own a property because they are more settled. So we're not sure, when we look at these numbers, whether it's a failure of people accessing the offer that government is making, or is just a choice. So we're just looking at that. But currently, these are the statistics that we have there in that column, where 600,000 employees are registered as homeowners, but receiving home an allowance, yet they are not turning that into home ownership. Whereas the program of government on housing is home ownership. And that therefore gives us a round of on the areas that we needed to respond on, Chair, but we're standing ready to add in areas where we have not covered ourselves adequately. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Teacher, don't worry about the title deed. You will come back to it when we ask you questions. Because when you respond to it, you also want to satisfy us in terms of what is the actual challenge. Can then, without wasting time, allow the members, honourable members, to ask questions, whether it's of clarity or of engagement.
Chair, I'm still checking the paper. I will ask. I have questions. I will ask. Let them ask. I will ask.
He likes to chair the meeting, so don't worry. I'll start with you, Honorable Mola.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. What progress has been made in relation to the Social Services Practitioner Bill? My second question, what progress has you made in upgrading infrastructure for pay points?
Okay, I found this on the web.
Sorry.
Okay. Okay. We are starting with human settlement. We're starting with human settlement. Can I then go to you, Honourable Member? I'll come back to you.
Okay.
Chairperson, I don't have a specific question. But I just think that in terms of the responses, especially around the proposed next steps, I think there should have been some kind of timeline given to us so that if we ever do follow-ups on some of these matters, it would become more clear.
Mm.
Thanks.
Okay. I'm coming back to you. I'm with you.
No, thank you, Chair. Also, I wanted to, she has already asked about the timelines, but I heard the DDG mentioning that some of the projects that were blocked, I see here you mentioning Nelson Mandela, Eastern Cape, but in your earlier on, I heard you mentioning Northwest. And it's not mentioned. You didn't mention it in your presentation. And the second question will be, if perhaps, since we from provinces, I think it will assist us moving forward if we can get in your report, we can get details, a detailed report that speaks to specific areas, especially in provinces. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Ntsame.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know about the issue of the title deed. When you mentioned something about the title deed issue, did you ever visit Mfuleni? Because when we are talking about Mfuleni is where I'm staying now, where somebody is busy selling houses, corrupt men, selling houses for the people. Are you going to go to a golden garden where you will find our people, and especially the veterans, they are not in possession of the title deeds, owning their own house, so that I can see those who are having two houses, how do they manage to get two houses without title deed? I thank you.
Okay. Honorable Sheikh.
Sorry, Chair. I should have asked the question in relation to C. And the document, it's around procurement issues. And I think towards the end, the department does indicate that the minister has issued out a directive in terms of procurement being at, where 30% is allocated to women enterprises and 10% to youth. Maybe just to give us an indication in terms of whether there has been compliance with that. Thanks.
Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. In your presentation, number F, you said the formal agreement with the Department of Energy has been entered to. When was the formal agreement signed? Is it working? And my other question is, from where I'm coming from, houses have two owners, how does this happen? Because you find that the house is in my name, but there is another one who's having the same number in the house. So what is does this happening? How?
Okay. Honorable Koya.
Thanks, Chair. I'm coming from the Northern Cape. There is a tendency there of people going into informal settlements. They get into a list. They get into a list for houses. They get allocated houses. They don't demolish their shacks. They rent their houses out. And at a later stage, they would sell that house that the government spent about 70,000, 80,000, up to 120,000. They would sell it for 30,000. What are the measures that are there in place to ensure that those people don't come back into a queue again for houses? And how does the Department of Human Settlement curb those bad practices of people? Because for them, they got that house free of charge, and they don't know the cost and the value attached to that house, and they just decide to sell it. And we've got people that are lined up to buy those houses. In fact, they even chase them and offer them money. We find out that in those settlements, there'll be three houses that are bought by one person, and he converts them into some sort of a compound where there are flats, people are staying there, are renting to this person. So there is that situation. That's the one issue. The other issue in terms of this innovative building materials, has the department sat down and done the cost analysis in terms of how much it costs and how much does brick and mortar cost? Of course, vis-a-vis durability, because that's also one thing that we also need to look at when we look into that into that particular measure. The issue of government employees housing scheme, to some government employees, it's still a pipe dream, because there's been no informed kind of advocacy campaign. Some of the employees think that this thing is still, because I was also made to understand that it's still in the process, it's still coming. Because employees, that's what they know, there's this thing coming, but they don't know that they can go and apply now and get those loans against their own pensions. But the other last thing, Chair, that is very important, the monitoring the use of your infrastructure grants. Because in many provinces, I would assume, like it happens in our province, infrastructure grants, they don't get used in some instances, because there are these fights on who should be given what tender and what and what. When people on the ground need service delivery, there's money for infrastructure, it gets returned, but there's no infrastructure on the ground. So what are the mechanisms that the department is employing in order to enforce and also the division of the confusion between local government and provincial government in terms of the provision of housing? Provincial government will say, no, this is our competency. Local government will say, no, this is our competency, and there would be that conflict. So how do you manage that particular issue? Thanks, Chair. Sorry.
Sure. I also have my own questions, JJ. The Deputy Minister is excused. He just came to apologize in person. Now they are going for a press briefing. You are excused, Deputy Minister. My question is on the issue of title deed. You said yourself it's a very difficult one. Even in terms of your annual report, it is reflected as such. If DG can explain the difficult part, maybe we can be able to be part of helping the department to make it more easier than it is. And secondly, in your presentation as a department, you have mentioned two provinces. We are from the provinces. So our questions will always lean along the lines of where we come from. You mentioned two metros, Nelson Mandela and Buffalo City Metro, but not very specific in terms of the program that you are doing there, the time frame that you start the project and the possible completion period in terms of your plans. I would like to know that. Apart from that, there's this issue, or island issue is a very critical issue for all of us as political parties. I hope I'm also talking for Honorable Mtamai here. Yes, he's agreeing. I know that you have said you are talking with department that deals with land, but would like to know, do you have a specific team that is set by the ministry and other relevant stakeholders to deal with the matter, and possible your time frame for rolling out such project, because it's a very critical project for us and also for our people out there. And you also said you have a partnership with CSIR that you are having in terms of housing development. What I would like to know, do you have houses that are already rolled out? If they are there, where are they located so that when we do our oversight, we're able also to see those houses? The place where they are, if they are, you have not started yet, it's fine. Tell us, when are you planning to roll out the project? If there's a number of those that have been rolled out already, please indicate. On the issue of giving opportunity to women and young people on issues of economic development under the HSIDG grant and USDG grant, would like to know the budget that you are talking about. And in your own commitment, you only spoke youth and women. I do not know, I don't want to assume, if also people that are living with disability, they are part of your target audience in terms of getting opportunities in the housing development. So far, those are the questions for me. Thank you. Honorable Ntsame?
Yes. I forget something because of due to the paperwork here. There is also a hostel in Kwamasiza hostel where it was built and finished. But my concern is the hostel, people are vandalizing it because for almost 2 years they've never ever put anyone on that place. So I would also want to know if when they are going to put people on that hostel, because our people are overcrowded, they don't have a place to stay. Thanks.
Can I allow you to respond?
Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity to respond. Let me state upfront that usually when we come to this committee, we always prefer to break down the answers by region, because we know that you have constituencies in the regions and you want practical examples. We always break it down by province, every answer, so that you get a sense of what's happening in various provinces and municipalities. And when we come back, we'll do the same. We will try and make it more provincial or municipal specific. Let me start with the last question, which is Kwamasiza Hostel. It's not only this particular hostel that is experiencing these challenges. The program that we are using to upgrade hostels is called Community Residential Unit Program, CRU in short. It's called, it replaced the old hostel redevelopment program. Now, I must be honest up front, it's a very expensive program because we pay 100% from the fiscus, we develop it. But where it becomes a problem is getting people at least to pay for the units that they are getting, because you are upgrading. Remember the old hostel program, people used to pay 10 rands, they used to pay 20 rands per bed, but now you have upgraded them into units, livable units, family units. And now the challenge now is that the occupants, the people that you are targeting for this particular program, are not willing to pay. And they want an RDP or PNG type of a unit so that the units can be given to them for free. And the challenge is that if you look at the hostels, the way they are designed, the new hostels that we are developing, they are more like your sectional titles, which means, therefore, that for these hostels to have a longer lifespan, they have to be maintained. And in order for them to be maintained, the occupants have to pay. So what we tried to do in Gauteng, which has proved to be very difficult, it's not only Kwamasisa, the others as well, I think Dube as well, was vandalized, and there were a number of these hostels. And in all of them, the biggest challenge is the allocation, is the qualification. People earn salary, and we want them to pay for the quality of that unit. And those who are not working, those who don't earn an income, we try and right-size them. In other words, we'll give them the BNG RDP unit. But it has proved to be a very difficult community facilitation beneficiary administration exercise. In fact, the former MEC of Human Settlements in Gauteng, Mr. Mashatile, took a decision that maybe we should convert some of these units into walk-ups, BNG walk-ups, which means you will have three-story or four-story BNG walk-ups. And now the challenge with that arrangement is the maintenance over time, because it would mean, therefore, that each individual must maintain his or her unit. We haven't mastered the art of managing these types of hostels, and I think it would require a little bit of innovation on our side. But the majority of hostel dwellers who were there before, they are saying they want to stay in those hostels and there is no need for them to pay. And if we are building PNG units or RDP units, and they need to be given those units for free. So I guess we need to master the art of negotiating with them, the art of facilitation, community facilitation, because we are experiencing this problem across the province. And it has cost us money to build them, and we need to recover that money, and we also need to maintain them. So we have that challenge. I would recommend maybe very strongly to the committee to ask us to come and talk about the specifics, because it's not one hostel. He's just giving us Kwamasisa. There are quite a number of them that are experiencing this problem. And maybe next time we can come and zoom into the hostel redevelopment program or the CRU program. The 30% set aside, the HSDG and USDG set aside, it's meant to cover, the 30% set aside is meant to cover people with disabilities as well. What we haven't worked out is the numbers. How much we listed the 10% for youth, we've listed the 20% for women. I don't think we have put the figure. There was a figure that we put aside for people living with disabilities. So if the 30% set aside is for these special groups, including people living with disabilities, and I'm sure William can come in here. Now the second question linked to this one is, are provinces and municipalities complying with this requirement? Now, Human Settlements took an initiative, and I was a little bit disappointed this year. I think I took my eyes off the ball. But we took an initiative which says, let's DORA this set aside. DORA means you put it in the Division of Revenue Act, because if it's not in law, it's not going to be adhered to. It's not going to be enforceable. So we put it in the Division of Revenue Act deliberately, because we wanted to make sure that those provinces that are not achieving this target, if you don't spend the 30%, you lose the money to the provinces that are spending 30% and above. So we wanted to use a carrot and stick to say you can't use the 30% set aside for any other program other than this special group. If you're not using it for this special group, then we will take the money and give it to those provinces that are doing well. So we tried in year one, and there were provinces that were doing well, like Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape. They were doing okay. Nelson Mandela Bay Metro, at some point, they were doing well in terms of meeting the target. But now they have regressed. We will give you the figures, the specific figures by municipality, by metro. We'll give you the specific figure by province over the last 3 years. I think it's important for you to get that information. We have it. It's a standing item in MINMEC. We name and shame the provinces that are not doing this, that are not adhering to this task. But I must be honest that the figures are very disappointing, especially last year. The figures were very disappointing, and I think we need to take this item back into the Division of Revenue Act. The reason why in the beginning the figures were looking good is because the AG had to enforce that clause in the Division of Revenue Act. Provinces were not allowed to move the money and spend it on other programs without seeking approval from the National Department and from National Treasury. I am of the view that if you want this program to work, please put it in the Division of Revenue Act so that it can be audited on an annual basis. Otherwise, if there is no enforcement and there is no consequence management, if HODs are not adhering to this target, then they won't do it. So my view is that perhaps we need to make it in, convert it into enforceable grant condition framework. The other question which was raised about building technology, CSIR, do we have units? Yes, we do, even here in this province, not far in Delft. One of our projects, the N2 Gateway project in Delft, we build about 2,000 units based on alternative building technology. In Gauteng, there are specific projects that have used innovative building technology. In Eastern Cape as well, there are specific projects. We can give you that list. We don't have it now. But we are already building using alternative building technology. The biggest challenge is the standardization of the specification, the standardization of the procurement processes, the standardization of the terms of reference. Because if you look at the current terms of reference, they tend to be biased towards conventional building, which is brick and mortar, and which is why the majority of alternative building service providers are finding it difficult to penetrate the industry. The pricing arrangement, you can look at it in different ways. We've looked at the price. You know, remember, in human settlements, if it's a BNG unit, the quantum is prescribed. For services, you pay, we provide 52,000, anything between 48 to 52,000 rands for those services. And that's prescribed, and it gets issued every year by minister, taking into account inflation. For the top structure, we're talking about 115,000 to 120,000 per unit. So if the alternative building technology is going to come above, way above the prescribed quantum, it's going to be very difficult for those service providers to penetrate the industry, which has been largely brick and mortar. So I think part of the problem is specification. The second part of the problem is procurement. And I guess the third part of the problem is that some of the building technology products are finding it difficult to go to price it within the subsidy quantum. We've looked at some products. There are products that are priced within the quantum, within the 120,000 quantum, but there are few of them. The majority of them are priced at 160, 170. Now, if you price it at 160, 170 for top structure only, you are coming way above the quantum, which will make it difficult for you to get a contract, because when you go out on a competitive bidding, you will be coming way above the required price, which government cannot afford. But what will make things easy is if we start producing this material in numbers, we manufacture it locally. There are still few companies that are manufacturing this locally, and we are very biased towards local procurement, towards local manufacturing. We don't think it's proper for us to import innovative technology from other countries, because we're exporting jobs when we do that. I think we need to buy local. So some alternative building technologies are still importing the material. The question of the land task team, is there any land task team? There is a land task team, what we call the JCC task team, chaired by ourselves, by Human Settlements. It's chaired by the DDG, responsible for strategy and planning. In there, there's public works, there's land reform, the Department of Land Reform is represented, public enterprises, because we want to start with government-owned land. The IMC on land reform, which is chaired by the deputy president, I think the last one met on last week, that IMC on land reform has taken specific decisions on which parcels of land should be transferred to human settlements. We've already identified them. We can come and present to you the priority human settlements development areas, or PHDAs, priority housing development areas, where we have targeted land parcels, publicly owned and privately owned. We do have that panel. The only challenge is that once you make that information public, you run a risk of invasions. We always try and manage it very tightly, and we would recommend that if we're going to come and share it with you, then we must create a mechanism so that it's not circulated widely, because there are a lot of invasions that are taking place these days. And once they get to see which land government owns in which place and what they are going to do with it, people go in, and some of the people do it for queue jumping. So we've done a lot of work. DTG responsible for programs and projects in the department, Mr. Joseph Lishabani, can come and present to you the priority human settlements development areas and the land parcels that we have targeted. There is a resolution of the cabinet committee, the IMC, the Interministerial Committee on Land Reform, that has been passed for some land parcels to be transferred to human settlements, and we've got the list. There was a question on title deeds. What makes it so difficult? DG, can we help you? Now, let's try and simplify the problem. We have to state the problem explicitly so that when we devise the solutions, we devise the right solutions. If you buy a house, all of us in the room, when we buy a house, we don't get a title deed within 3 months. It takes some time for all of us. We middle-class people who are well off, they can get the best lawyers in the world, but they still don't get a title deed within 3 months or 6 months. That process of getting a title deed still takes time. Now, in this space where we are, what compounds the problem is the planning aspect of it. Some of the houses where we're struggling to issue title deeds is because the township was never opened in the first place. Remember, opening a township register simply means that once you have a piece of land, that oven, it's a big oven, you then have to design it, have a general plan, have those subdivisions, submit it for engineering services, planning approvals, all of those things to the council. For you to be able to get that title, that area that is demarcated, for you to get a title deed. If you don't do that, then it means 5 months, 6 months down the line, you have to retrofit that process. And retrofitting it is extremely time-consuming, because it means you must get the engineers to go and check the size of the oven, to go and check the borders, the boundaries, to go and check the infrastructure that was connected there. That retrofitting exercise means you must go back to the municipality, work with the municipal planning division, work with the engineering division, and that is what is taking time. It has to be done, but it's taking a lot of time for it to be done. By the time you go back, you find that the people who are in that house, they owe the municipality a lot of money. Now, you owe the municipality a lot of money, we are not going to get a clearance certificate. Because before you get a title deed, then the clearance certificate must be issued by the municipality, the rates clearance certificate. So then the municipality says, okay, who's going to pay for the debt? And then we have negotiations with the municipality to say, let's find a way to write off some of this debt, because some of the people will not be in a position to pay because they are not working. So that's what causes the delay. We can come with a report. We report on this on a quarterly basis to MINMEC. We report it to the portfolio committee. I think we should share with you the report on those targets. The targets on title deeds are divided into a number of categories. Establishment of township, conveyancing. Conveyancing is the easiest part. It's when all the planning work has been done, then you ask the conveyancing lawyers to help you with the transfer. So we do have a report on which province is performing, which province is not performing, and what are the challenges in those provinces. I would recommend that we share that information with you. We can give it to you the latest by next week, because we have to cover the end of the quarter up to, I think the end of the quarter will be what? September, the second quarter. We can give you the first quarter. The first quarter is not looking good. And then we can give you the second quarter. Let me move a little bit faster. I will not dwell on some of the other... Okay, all these other things will provide a report. Nelson Mandela, we can give you other municipalities and explain the problem as well. Buffalo City, what we are doing there. There was a question on the selling. And that selling, in some cases, it's illegal. It's not a legal transaction. And those people who are selling houses at 20,000, 40,000, they are doing that in the black market. So which means the transaction is not recognized. If you go back to the deeds office, you'll find that the original owner, the house is still registered in the name of that original owner. In some cases, people go to police station and get affidavit to sell the house. So that transaction is not proper, especially if the house is sold within 8 years, because there is a limitation in terms of how you can sell that house. The government must have the first right of refusal. You can't just sell it. So what people are doing, they're just doing this thing illegally. With demolishing the shack, yes, even if you don't demolish the shack, remember in the first place, people, their priority, why they're going into urban areas, is not a house. The priority is an income. The priority is to get a job, the priority is to get income. So when people get a house and they don't have an income, then they rent the house and they go back to the shack. But once you get a house, you can only get a house once, can't get a house twice. So when you go back into the shack, you will not be able to get a house again, because in the system it will show, because we work with Home Affairs, we work with UIF, so you can't get a house twice. The people who are owning houses twice, you may find that those people, some of them, they bought those houses, probably RDP houses. In some cases, you find that the teachers, the nurses, the policemen are the ones who buy these houses, because we're not providing gap housing for them. They don't qualify for free housing. So they buy the houses properly, and then they register them under themselves. In some cases, people don't buy these houses properly. But also the queue jumping exercise, if you go back to the shack, you'll get an income, but you're not going to get a house again. I can guarantee you that the system does work. The only option that you have is to buy a house, and you are allowed to buy that house after 8 years, and you are allowed to sell it after 8 years.
Can you wrap up?
Yes, thank you, Chair. The last question on block projects, the easiest way to answer that question is to share with you the number of block projects. Instead of explaining it, we'll just give you a list of block projects by province. We do have that list. We have Northwest, we have Gauteng, we have Eastern Cape. You'll see that the biggest number of block projects in the country are in Northwest. But we're working on it through the intervention. Remember, Northwest is under administration right now. So Chair will share with you the information.
Okay.
We won't give you a long answer.
Thank you very much, DG. Let's close this discussion with the DG by these few points. We'll be expecting from you, DG, to please provide us specifics in future when you come in terms of our provinces, so that we don't delay your time asking about things that are within our provinces. Two, is the issue of your percentage in terms of economic benefit from the projects that you are doing as human settlement for people with disability, because you have said to us you do not have a specific percentage. So we would like the department to give us a specific, because we have to oversight you if you are meeting your targets in terms of that. Two, on the issue of hostels, we would like to have the number of hostels that we are having a problem with, so that we also, in our public participation programs that we have, oversight programs that we have, and also taking parliament, we are able to go and oversight such. And the last one is the report on your title deeds. Would like to have this title deeds report, please. And you said you have alternative technology houses that you are building. Would like to know specific areas and an amount of those houses that you have constructed. Again, it helps us as people that are coming from provinces to be able to go and observe and also talk to people that are staying in those. E advice from the chair on the issue of hostels. I think what you are missing in terms of those projects that you are doing at hostels, you do not have an effective public participation program before you start the development of those, because you are able to get a buy-in if you go to those communities, you have meetings, you have their own ideas. Sometimes, Minister Ugwede Mandashe used to say, you cannot make people to be observers to their own development. You must be working with them to be part of their own development. So once you don't do that public participation, the problem, you're going to get resistance because they didn't give you a buy-in. I know you may be doing it, but it's not effective, your public participation. On those few words, thank you very much, Honorable DG. Kodwa, please tell the minister it's our last time that we allow you to present her report. Thank you very much. Then can we, you are excused. Can we then allow the Department of Social Development to take us through? First, I'm sure they will be introducing themselves as we have already done so as honorable members, because we don't know them. Over to you, DG. All right.
No, it's not a question, Chair. I just want to say to the department, there are always advantages and disadvantages when you speak last. We've got only 20 minutes left. We're going to the house sitting at 2.
We are going to the house, but we are not going to disadvantage them. I've already reported myself that I am in the committee. They know that we are here. Don't worry.
Okay.
So. You are not at a disadvantage. You are at an advantage. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Otherwise, we won't give them grants when they retire. Yes. Chair, quickly, we don't want also to waste time. We'll do the introduction quickly. My name... My name is Mzoli Sitoni. I am the acting DG for Social Development of Social Development. As the Deputy Minister was here to apologize, also the Minister is in Tunisia. She's not able to join us today. That's also she's apologizing for not able. We would quickly I'm assuming that there are some blind people that would want to hear the voice of the person. We'll start with the first, Brenda.
That's a good which one?
Technology. I'm not as young as I look. Good afternoon, members. My name is Brenda Sibeko. I am the DDG responsible for comprehensive social security at the Department of Social Development.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson and members. My name is Connie Nomalo. I'm the DDG responsible for welfare services in the Department of Social Development.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Osborne Masilela, and I'm Chief Director in the Office of the DG.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. I'm Diane Dunkley. I'm from SASA, responsible for grants administration.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. My name is Sibina Shapolosa. I'm the special advisor to the minister.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members. My name is Jessica Longway, and I'm the parliamentary and cabinet liaison officer in the minister's office.
Thank you, Chair. I'm noticing, Chair, that in South Africa we are known to be the champions of persons with disabilities. and the issue of terminology becomes key. We don't say people living with disabilities, it's persons with disabilities in the UN language that we are signatory to. But disabled people in South Africa, they are saying people, disabled people basically, because they are saying they have got barriers that they need to remove. Going to the submission, into our input chain, I notice also that we might have given a document that is not following in terms of your initial document that raises those commitments. The document that we have starts with D, and we don't have the C on the document that I have, and I'm sensing that there might be some mistakes that have been, or elimination of the information that we thought we were giving in. The first, in terms of the document that we submitted, the first questions or commitment that we're addressing is commitment D, which speaks to the issue of absorption of social workers, which is about 555, which Ms. Nqumalo will speak to. It has a commitment of 591,269 million. For the MTF, and that the first year is about 181 million that we're saying we're going to do something about. Ms. Nqumalo will speak to that quickly. And the second one goes to E, which speaks to the issue of the foster care area, which also Ms. Nqumalo will speak to. We had addressed the portfolio committee on this matter yesterday. The third one is an area on ECD, which we have continuous discussion between ourselves and the Department of Basic Education. We'll also allow the members in terms of what is it that we're doing in this area. then, Chair, The last one for Ms. Nqumalo speaks with G, which talks to the social service practitioners draft bill. On this one, Chair, we have not submitted this bill because of the program of the fifth administration, which ended before we could be able to do so. But this is now due to be presented for in this financial year, and that in 2020-2021 we'll be able to introduce it to Parliament. And that one, I'm just making sure that Ms. Nqumalo doesn't have to waste time and speak to it. That's what we'll do. Then we would have Diane speaking to the issues of post office and CPS, in terms of what is happening in there and how we're able to empower people. And the next one, we will be speaking to also issues of addressing long queues in dilapidated buildings and promoting dignity. Diane will speak to that. And the issue of around comprehensive social security, Didigis Beko will speak to it. So that's how we'll handle it quickly, Chair. Let me quickly hand over to Didigi Nqumalo. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. With the first one, which is a D, around the allocated conditional grant of 181 million. This was an MTF allocation. As the acting DG has said, we have managed to appoint the 556 social workers using this conditional grant. What you see in the outer years is basically to maintain the 556 that we have appointed, because these are human beings already in the staff establishment. So it doesn't mean that in 1819 with the 196 we are appointing new. It's only that it's going to sustain their salaries moving forward. You will see in the document that I've submitted that there are additional numbers, which I'm also trying to show that over and above, there are some provinces that appointed more than to give it a higher number, but the grant, in terms of the grant framework and the DORA, it was 556 that was recorded in the books of Treasury. And this money this year is already built in into the budget of each of the provinces. I have not broken down that which province has appointed how many, but that can be provided if the committee so requires. We do have the numbers. Now, in terms of the second one, the E, it's the Ministerial Committee on Foster Care, which was appointed to just investigate how foster care system is working. Then they made critical recommendations. So Minister at that time committed that we will implement those recommendations to strengthen the foster care system. The first area was around strengthening parental support for foster care parents. Here what has happened is that we are training foster parents to support them in their parenting roles. The programs that we are implementing in all the 9 provinces includes parenting for teenagers and also Families Matter program. So there's a program that we have branded, we call it Families Matter, which is currently being implemented. On the strengthening of prevention and early intervention, we have adopted the community-based prevention and early intervention program, which is called ECBINDI. ECBINDI is a program where orphans and vulnerable children are supported with homeworks in a particular safe park or drop-in center, provided with meals, assisted with, you know, play, because as children they still need to play because some of them are heading families. So that's one key program we're implementing. The second one is the YOLO, which means you only live once. And this is linked more to sexual and reproductive rights, but also to the life skills that we imparting to our children and young people. This is also linked to the next one, which is called Ezabasha program. And what is interesting is that these two programs were named or were designed by the young people and the children themselves. They even designed the logos of these programs. But what is also important within this area is the 365 days program that we are implementing in provinces for the prevention of abuse of children in our country. The last area around the ministerial committee is the feasibility of establishing foster care units, because the committee recommended that the only way in which we can deal with this problem is to ensure that each province has got a specialized unit. So what has happened, since only one province which has really moved in terms of putting together the unit, which is Mpumalanga. The other provinces are at different levels. Some are at a level where they are still trying to get approval for their structures to be considered and reprioritization of budget. So we have not moved as much as we would have liked to in terms of setting up these units, but there is dedicated capacity that is currently dealing with foster care. What we want to see is specialized units that will really ensure that foster care is implemented properly. Now, on the last one, on the conditional grant for ECD, we prefer a conditional grant for the same reason that the DG of Human Settlement has said, because if something is not in the DORA, what happens is that budget disappears in provinces. They reprioritize it for other priorities in their individual provinces. But once it's in the DORA and it's a conditional grant, it's easy to monitor and it's easy to make sure that what is intended for is implemented. So for this ECD, we were allocated in the books, then it was written 812 million. But when you look at the report that I've provided, for the 2 years, it's 808,412,000, meaning it increased. It's over a billion in the 3 years, but for the 2 years, it was 808,412,000. So this money was basically to strengthen or expand ECD services through subsidy, but also the other element was to make sure that we support the conditionally registered ECDs to fully comply so that they can get full registration. So there were also targets that were set and also put on the Division of Revenue, but also on the grant framework that Treasury finally approved, linked to the allocation. The 17 and 18 budget in terms of performance, you will see that in 2.1 it's 81%. So it shows that there was a slow start because that's when the grant started. So the slow starting made some provinces to really underspend, especially Eastern Cape. You will see that Eastern Cape is expends just 48%. So which required us to put extra support measures for this province to really pick up in terms of making sure that they implement. You will see as we move to other years, they have really improved. But in the first year, they really, really were not doing well. For 18-19, there's an improvement of 98%. So they started with 81%. 18-19, it moved to 98%. So they're beginning to master how the grant is being utilized. Now, in terms of the subsidy, as I indicated, there were targets. For 17-18, the target was to reach 72,000 additional children in the system because we are currently subsidizing children. But Treasury said, let's also give you a grant to continuously add more poor children in the system with your 15 rand per day, per child, per attendance for 264 days. So you'll see, as I indicated, that there was a slow start. The target was not achieved. It links with the 81% expenditure. So the actual performance was 62,870. But that has grown in 18-19 because we said to provinces, you have to look for those children that you have missed in 17-18 to be able to be or to come on board. You will see that there's an overachievement in 18-19 in terms of actual performance. Instead of 103, the achievement was 107,000. Then when I continue with the maintenance, there were also targets for maintenance. And I must say with maintenance, there were a lot of challenges because with maintenance now, the procurement process also contributed in terms of that because there was also assessment that required to be done for all the identified existing conditional registered ECDs. So for 2017-18, the target was 593 based on the allocation of that budget. The only performance was 459. But in 18-19, you see, Honorable Chair, that the target was 369, but it almost doubled. It's 539. So they're beginning to master how the system works. In terms of the last area, which is the Social Service Practitioners Bill, the DG has alluded to this one. I won't talk much of it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Can you go to the next one?
Thank you so much, Chair and members. I will speak to the two points that were raised for SASSA around the pay points. And I just wanted to, as part of the response, just bring the members up to speed in terms of the changes that have happened in the payment environment for SASSA since these commitments were made, in that we ended the contract with CPS, which really was servicing about 10,000 cash pay points. And CPS, in terms of the numbers of people who collected at the cash pay points, the majority of the people went to cash pay points. However, from April of last year, we changed that, and CPS's contract for the cash pay points only ended on the 30th of September in 2018. So from the approximately 10,000 cash pay points that we had, we now have a total of 1,740 only that are still serviced. And in those 1,740 pay points, we service less than 200,000 beneficiaries on a monthly basis. So people have really been able to find their way to alternative channels, particularly the ATMs or the merchants to go and access their money. The strategic intent within SASSA is certainly to continue reducing cash pay points. We will not take the 1,740 away until there is an alternative. But we do want to reduce the cash pay points because they really are incredibly expensive. They also raise huge security risks for the beneficiaries who go there, but also for the staff who service them. So part of the agreement with the post office is to say, how are we able to look at alternative channels for clients? And that would include things like mobile money, but it can only be introduced once you've got the ecosystem to support it. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. But also to look at how do we bring in the local infrastructure to be able to use that to facilitate payments to people where there isn't fixed infrastructure like a post office outlet or a bank in the nearby community. So that is an area which is ongoing, and between us and the post office is a focus area that has to be worked on. And over time, as I say, the 1,740 pay points that we still have will be reduced. We can certainly make available to the members the list of the pay points per province, but currently we have the highest number still in the Eastern Cape, which has 600 pay points, followed by Limpopo with 440 and then KwaZulu-Natal with 357. And these obviously are our most rural provinces, so it stands to reason that they would have more pay points than the others. And that information can certainly be made available to the committee. The second point for SASSA, which really links to the first one, is to address the long queues, the dilapidated buildings, and promote dignity. We still have a challenge here, and we're not going to say there isn't a challenge, because what we're seeing is that on the first day of payments, you have the queues now outside the bank ATMs or at the different merchants where people go and collect their money. So you've just moved a problem from a pay point previously to an alternative, and there are still things that we have to do to be able to address that. We have, in remaining with the 1,740 pay points, tried to ensure that the remaining pay points are in infrastructure, so that there are very few, but there are still some that are paid in open spaces. At those ones, we negotiate with the post office to try and bring mobile infrastructure on the day of payment, so that at least there are some chairs available, there is some shelter. But as you can understand, that is a very expensive option, and it's not a very effective one. So part of what has to happen is to look at how we're able to relocate those pay points that are still out in the open, but still make them accessible for the communities where there isn't other infrastructure which is nearby. We also, as part of the strategic direction moving forward, is to get our beneficiaries to understand that they do not have to withdraw all the cash at once, that the card is a fully functional debit card, and that they can actually use that to procure goods or to draw as they need money in the month, rather than draw it all at once and have the risk of losing that money and then not having anything at all. But that beneficiary education is something that will need to continue over a longer period. So I really just wanted to reassure the members of the committee that we do manage the services that are provided by the post office in line with a service level agreement that has been signed. We know that there are challenges, and those are being addressed, because as much as post offices are also now part of the network of the payment system, there are some post offices which really are not up to standard, that even where the clients go to those post offices, they're really very small, there's insufficient infrastructure and so on, and that is something that we would continue working with the post office over a period of time. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. I'm going to only be responding to question C, which relates to deepening comprehensive social security as part of implementing outcome 13. The work that has been happening under that outcome 13 is two areas of work. One is the comprehensive social security reform proposal that is currently under consideration at NEDLAC. We completed that. We submitted to NEDLAC the report, which is the culmination of work that was done by an interdepartmental task team comprising our department, the National Treasury, the Department of Transport, and the Department of Labor, all of whom have some social security responsibility in the form of, for us, SASA, for the Department of Transport, the Road Accident Fund, and then for the Department of Labor, it's the Compensation Fund and the Unemployment Insurance Fund. So all of that work of looking at both the social assistance work, the grants framework, and the social insurance where people actually contribute for their social security benefits is contained in that report. Significant proposals are made there for the reform of the system in order for it to become more comprehensive and to operate more cohesively, where people who contribute and those who don't contribute form part of a broader comprehensive social security system, but also to include the work that is done by the private sector in terms of private occupational funds that are also in place for providing retirement benefits to people who are informal employment. So all of the proposals relating to that are now under consideration to create a more comprehensive system for everybody in the country and make sure that nobody falls through the cracks in the social security system. NEDLAC has been discussing those issues, the proposals from government. Now in 2018, last year, they then agreed in principle to the proposals that are contained in the paper. One of which, the most significant proposal there, is to create a national social security fund that will include everybody who is working in order for them to save for their retirement instead of just depending on the social grants framework when they retire. And in addition to that, there's a proposal around creating a more coherent institutional framework so that nobody falls through the cracks, or there's also no double dipping of the benefits that are currently in place in the country. So what is happening now is NEDLAC is still refining some of those proposals and hardening exactly what is going to be presented to Cabinet. The intention is to, at least now that the new parliament is in place and the new government is in place, to table the proposals to them for consideration. So we are finalizing the proposals in NEDLAC and then they will be presented to Cabinet. So that's the work around the comprehensive social security reform. In addition to that, there's work underway. We presented a bill, a social assistance amendment bill last year, whose intention is to do three things. Firstly, is to respond to the court case that the department faces around foster care, the issues that are that we, I imagine, we are aware of around the backlogs in foster care. One of the proposals is to create an intermediate grant between the child support grant and the foster child grant, so that children who are in childhood households and children who are orphaned but are living with their parents, with their families and not non-family members, can be given an intermediate grant, so that they don't all apply for the foster child grant and end up waiting for a long time for that benefit. That's one provision. The other provision is to reduce the length of time that it takes for people who are appealing against any decision of SASA, for the time it takes for the issues to be resolved, to be shortened by taking away the appeal step that they take to SASA, so that they appeal directly to an appeals tribunal that is located in the Department of Social Development. That's the second provision. The third provision is to introduce an inspectorate for social assistance. The current legislation that is in place was recommending for that institution to become a government department. But we are proposing that instead of it being a government department, to rather be a component, a government component, which is a smaller institution because it doesn't have any policy-making function. So those are the three things that are in the bill. It's already been tabled in Parliament, but it didn't get dealt with by the previous Parliament. It's now going to be dealt with by the new Parliament. Those are the three provisions that are in that bill. Those are the two areas of work that are underway. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We're done.
Thank you, Gigi. Let's then interact with the information that we have received. Thank you very much for the response. Honorable Sheikh, Honorable Koya, Honorable Zamai.
Thank you, Chair. I just hope I can speak without coughing. But be that as it may, Chair, I think in terms of the social work issue, which is D, I just wanted to know, this program was started in 2017, and currently what has been said is that all, like 556 social workers have been absorbed in this financial year. What I want to know is that since the inception of this program, have all the social workers been absorbed, all the trained social workers that have graduated, whether they have actually been absorbed. And in addition to that, I want to know that I think there was a policy pronouncement made in the fifth term of government, especially around one social worker per ward. Even though these 556 social workers have now been absorbed, where are we in terms of trying to get to that target? Chair, my other question relates to the response in terms of strengthening parental support for foster parents and strengthening prevention and early intervention. For me, that's a lot of information, but it's not telling us what is actually being done. But thank you for the info. But I think we need to know in terms of implementation what is actually going on. I think with three, there was some element of trying to address implementation. But obviously we would want to know where you say there's a fully implemented unit of for social workers in Mpumalanga. But in other provinces, I think we should, if we can get information in terms of to what extent are those units in place or not in place, or what has been done towards that. Chairman, I think in terms of early childhood development, I note the increase in the targets as well as the utilization of budgets. But a critical thing in ECD, I know you also speak about maintenance money, and I'm not sure what, maybe to explain what is the maintenance for. But a critical element in early childhood development services is the actual infrastructure. And I know it's not necessarily covered here, but the department does develop certain guidelines or certain criteria or compliance criteria, let me put it that way, that all ECD centers have to comply with. But infrastructure is a key thing, and I'm not sure why the department doesn't look into funding infrastructure for early childhood development. However, I know we're working in a policy process where ECD is also, some elements of ECD is moving to Department of Education. I think, Chair, my...
You're done.
I'll come back if I...
Sure. It's you, Honorable Koi.
Thank you very much, Chair. I like to make reference to the fact that I come from the Northern Cape, where the distance between Upington and Rietfontein is 268 kilometers in one municipality. And you find a social worker who is based in Upington having to service Rietfontein and drive to and fro. I'm doing that preamble because I want to check with the department in terms of their recruitment strategy. Because I think we are at a level where the department should be identifying children at high school level, identify them for certain services that are needed by the department, so that you are able to identify a child from Rietfontein who goes and does and study social work and come back and stay in Rietfontein and service the community of Rietfontein instead of getting that person who will be based in Upington. That's just but one example. We can make many examples of that. And the second issue is that if I read your document well, it says all graduates were employed during 2017 and 2018 financial year with full entry-level salary packages. Only Western Cape graduates were employed on contract. Now, there are two things that I'm making out of this thing, is that it's either the Western Cape was doing social development a favor by employing those graduates. They did not need them. Or they just wanted to access the money. Because it can't be that all other provinces employ people on a full-time basis and only the Western Cape employs people on contract. And we are not told in terms of what then becomes the next step moving forward, because there is a trend with the Western Cape where they want to do their own things, and they will always find reasons of being different from other provinces. So I think that's the matter that the department needs maybe to guide us in terms of what happened, because I should think if they did not need those social workers, they should have been allocated somewhere else. But also, it would be very helpful if the department in the next engagement also gives us a breakdown per province in terms of how many social workers have been recruited per province, so that at least we have a sense of whether we are going forward or backwards. The issue of ECD, when I disappeared at some point, there was a debate of the Department of Education taking over ECD. Or was it social development that was going to take over, but something to that effect? Because now you've got ECD that is accountable to education. You've got ECD, like ECD in primary schools.
Mm.
There are ECD centers in primary schools. They are under the Department of Education. Then you've got private ECD institutions that are under the Department of Social Development. The process of synchronizing those ECD centers, how far is it? And maybe you will also explain it nicely to us, whether it's you must give over to education or education giving over to you. And that's the question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. You see, I have a problem with SASA. I ask myself, because SASA, since this thing, this grant was started in 2017, we have a long queue on this department where you will find our people are waiting to get their grants. I just want to know if they are still getting that cheap minimum and carols for our people. And I have a serious concern about there are people where, I don't know when I was still outside here, when the people they were facing churches, corrupt, because SASA is the one of the department that was so corrupt. I have never heard seen anything about that. There are so people being arrested for stealing the people's money. I have never mentioned that. Lastly, those people are being arrested. I have never heard saying anything about that. And I would like him to mention if there is changes for our people, they are no longer going to wait a long queue waiting for
be held at the SASSA department. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can I protect the department from Honorable Ntsamai on the issue of cases of the department? Because it's not one of the issues that we've asked from the department to respond to. It would be unfair of me as a chair to ask them that question at a spotlight here and now. If you are saying to them now, I would appreciate they must take this with them and respond in writing on the steps that have been taken by the department on cases that you have seen on TV, you have heard on radio, but they were not part of those questions that we have asked. So that one, I want them to package it in that fashion, not necessarily respond on it here and now, take it back. When you come back to the committee, please give us a report in writing in terms of this question. We have 15 minutes to play with. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, one of the weaknesses maybe from our part with the minister is also working on it is the issue of communication in terms of the work that we do. So we will try and minister is in the process of making sure that we improve in that area so that people, especially those that are supposed to do oversight on us, know upfront in terms of the work that we do. I will ask the colleagues to respond to the questions, Chair. But with regards to the ECD, we are the minister and the minister of basic education are working in this area. However, the Department of Basic Education takes full responsibility of grade R because that's 8-6, and then we have a transitional grade, which is RR, which is age 5. So these are some of the work that we're supposed to do in terms of moving that grouping. Because for now, we have to take responsibility of 0 to 4 till a decision is taken in terms of both the departments on how we are supposed to work together. Also with the Department of Health, because we're providing a supportive role, because the Department of Basic Education takes the responsibility of leading in this area of ECD, because that's what the announcement was all about. But I'll ask the colleagues to amplify on some of the questions. Thanks, Connie.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and members. I'll start with the social workers' issues. The scholarship itself started in 2007, not 2017. Since 2007, we managed to train 12,222 social workers, of which we have been absorbing until 2013. Since 2013, provinces were experiencing challenges in terms of, one, budget allocations, but also the reduction of the COE, composition of employee budget, where they could not even now begin to absorb the social workers that are being trained through the scholarship program. Now, currently, we're sitting with a backlog of 4,347. This number fluctuates. Next time you can call me, I'll indicate a different number, because as we get opportunities for these social workers, either on contract, we prioritize them because we do have a database. So currently, as I speak today, we're sitting at 4,347 backlog. So if you subtract from the 12,222, there's quite a number of social workers that have been appointed. But this is still a big number, the 4,000, because there's high unemployment and there's a need for social workers really to perform the duties of the violence that we're seeing every day in our country. Secondly, the issue of whether the issue of one social worker per ward. Yes, there was that policy decision. However, there's also what the NDP is saying. NDP says We need 55,000 social service professionals. And social service professionals is not only social workers. So what we did as a department is to come up with a demand and supply model, which is scientific in nature. It begins to tell us which of the categories and what are the numbers that we need for us to deliver on the mandate that we are supposed to deliver as a department, including, of course, social workers. So now, it cannot be necessarily one social worker per ward, because some wards are very big and some wards are apart in terms of distance. So we have to look at the ratio currently. It's one social worker is to 3,000 in terms of the population. So we have to look at what is doable and feasible, looking at the spread of the each of the provinces. So this model begins to take those demographics into consideration when we came up with numbers. Now, remember, Honorable Chair and members, we have stopped now the scholarship program as it is, because we are using this money to appoint the social workers, because it doesn't make economic sense to continue training, although we need them, for them to sit at home. So we went to Treasurer and say, can you pause on the scholarship so that we take this money and appoint the social workers? That's where the 556 comes from. The conditional grant comes from, it's not additional money, because Treasurer said, there's no new money. Take what is there and convert it so that you appoint. So what is left in our budget is, you know, for those that are finishing. So we have stopped the past 2 years taking new students. So we have only the third years and the fourth year students that are currently completing. They will also add to the backlog once they complete, because on average we have 1,005 social workers graduating in a year. So they will add to this backlog moving forward. So we are also working with Cabinet and say, because Cabinet directed to say, come back to us with a strategy that will say, how can private sector and other government departments, including basic education, appoint social workers so that they can work in different settings rather than giving this burden to social development, because you may not have money to appoint them. But if each and every sector that requires social work services, appoint your SAPs, your defense, your family advocate offices, your correctional services, let them look at anything private sector. In the mining industry, you need social workers. In any other company where you also need employee assistance program, we're beginning to say, can't you appoint social workers so that we don't have social workers that are not sitting and not doing anything. Now, in terms of also saying the strengthening of the support that the Honorable Member has said, I think here we will provide the details in terms of where this program was implemented, how many parents were reached per province, including the appointments of these social workers. I do have it in terms of breakdown per province that was allocated to them. So we will submit that information. I don't have it with me now in terms of exact numbers. I think with the ECD, the acting DG has tried to indicate in terms of the movements, but members will know that social development, in addition to the different age cohorts, we're also doing the leadership and coordination of policy. That will move to DBE, because in terms of pronouncement is that they will have to make sure that they coordinate and provide leadership in terms of policy implementation of ECD across board. So I think I will end there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to respond very quickly and take note of what the Chair has said, that we would certainly provide the written response. SASA is very clear that we will not tolerate if our own staff are involved in any form of corruption or fraud, and there are consequences for that, and we would be able to give that kind of information to the committee. We will provide that in writing. The other question around the queues at our local offices, which came up, it is something that we're very aware of. And I think every time you see a downturn in the economy, the number of people who come to SASA to apply increases, and we don't have a corresponding increase in the number of staff that we have. So unfortunately, queues at our local offices for applications is a reality. It is something that we continue to try and address, but until such time as we are in a position where we can increase the staff complement, it is going to be staying with us. Thank you.
There was an issue around maintenance, which Ms. Nxumalo forgot to respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My apologies. In terms of maintenance, where we said maintenance is basically infrastructure, because the ECDs that are conditional registered, most of them, they are struggling in the compliance of norms and standards in terms of safety issues for the infrastructure. So this grant assists them to meet the basic minimum that will make sure that children are not exposed. So we are assisting them to meet those standards so that we can register them fully and fund them properly. But also, as the Honorable Member has said, we do have a prototype and a registration regime that takes into consideration different levels of ECDs. There are those, the well-to-do ones, the Montessoris, there are the medium ones, and there are the lowest ones, which we must also support to make sure, because whether we like it or not, there are kids there that needs to be protected in terms of safety issues. Thank you.
For the responses, but we are really taking note of what Honorable Ntsama have raised, which will respond to us in writing. And there was an issue which was raised by Honorable Koyia, unequal implementation of policy of the department. So I'm sure you are taking it with you, the fact that in other provinces we are absorbing, but in some province they are not absorbing. So what then becomes the role of the department in terms of that? If it is a policy matter, in our view, it should be implemented across without fail. So please, it's one matter that we must take it with you and respond to us. We are being lenient to you because the minister is not here, a person that will be putting her on spot and ask her, Minister, what are you doing? We don't want to say that to you. Take that back and respond to us in writing. Thank you to all of you for the questions that were asked by the honorable members and as well the response from the department. I hope we'll be working well together as this committee. It is just a matter of you responding to the issues that we are raising, because when things are raised to us, it's because people have tried all avenues. So it's only us, their hope, that we'll be able to make you to account on your undertakings. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Critical matter that I didn't raise with you, I'm reminded here. Chairperson has the right to make our meeting a closed meeting. For the purpose of